This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker this morning was Congressman Robin Kelly, who represents the 2nd Congressional District since 2013. Her district covers the south side of Chicago and the south suburbs. We're actually having a doubleheader today because our afternoon speaker will be a panel moderated by Heather Ancini from the Chicago Public Education Fund, where they release their new report on principals and principal retention in the Chicago public schools. Congressman Kelly is the ranking member of the Subcommittee on Information Technology and addressed the subject of cybersecurity. She also is the senior Illinois representative on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. She's dedicated much of the last few years for championing what she calls common sense gun reform. And she said that she thought they would be able to enact legislation eliminating the bump stocks that we associate with the Las Vegas massacre, because at the beginning, the NRA and House Speaker Paul Ryan seemed to endorse that approach, but they seem to have backed off now, and she seems very disappointed over that. Prior to becoming a member of Congress, Robin Kelly was a member of the Illinois House of Representatives and the Chief Administrative Officer of Cook County. She's a native of New York City and announced that she is a New York Yankee fan, which drew a scattering of boos as well as some applause from the audience of more than 250 people. She addressed the question of bipartisanship and said we must end the us versus them mentality. We must stop demonizing the other party. She's hopeful that a new age of activism, particularly young people, may lead to a path back from the cliff of demonization. She said we must learn to respect each other and make a commitment to finding solutions and debating the question of, do the ends justify the means or the means justify the ends?
Thank you so much. And now I want you to give yourselves a round of applause for making it here this morning. Good morning, and thank you all for coming out today, and especially so very early. I'd like to thank the City Club for inviting me to speak and for all the work you do to keep our city engaged and informed. My comments today are less of a speech. Someone told me to come and kick butt, but I'm not going to kick butt today. My comments today are less of a speech and more of a series of questions, questions that I hope I can provide some answers to. But some of these questions are too big for one person to answer. They are questions we need to answer as a nation. These are big questions about who we are, how we treat each other, and what kind of future we want to leave our children and our grandchildren. Will they have a better and brighter future? Will the future of energy and technology be innovated here or in Shanghai? Will our nation continue to lead the world in innovation and human rights? These are tough questions, questions with no simple answer and no simple path forward. So let's start with the big one. Is bipartisanship dead? Recent polling from Pew Research Center shows that we are a deeply divided nation, no surprise to anyone here. Perhaps more now than ever before. Over the past two decades, the number of Americans who express a consistently liberal or consistently conservative position has more than doubled. And since 1994, individuals who express a highly negative view of members of the other party have also doubled. In just over two decades, we've managed to push ourselves further and further apart from one another, and it continues to grow. How can we even talk to each other with so much space dividing us? But we've done more than retreat to our individual entrenched bases. We've begun demonizing each other, and that's the most dangerous element. Right now, 44% of Democrats and 45% of Republicans have a very unfavorable opinion of the other party and its members. By comparison, fewer than 20% in each party held the same view in 1994. And I will tell you, because people never believe this, that in Congress, we get along much better than you would think. And I liken it to two teams, like, let's say, I'll leave baseball alone. But let's say the Warriors in Cleveland, they fought each other for the championship. But as soon as the game was over, they hugged each other. LeBron hugged Kevin Durant and all of that. But the fans are the ones that, you know, keep the dislike and the hate or the whatever going. But the teams really at the end do get together, and we do too in D.C., even though it may not look like that. But we've truly begun to define ourselves by our own personal politics. We've crafted a dangerous us versus them mentality. Tragically, we are no longer Americans who see the world differently. We are no longer Americans committed to the same goal with different means of achieving it. We are Democratic Americans and Republican Americans. We are a country of red and blue. Fox News versus MSNBC, Huffington Post versus Breitbart. We each and every one of us, we must work to change it. How did this even happen? What is driving this division, a division that's getting worse, not better? Research shows a few potential causes are personalized silos created by engine algorithms and social media, news outlets that have become more propaganda than substance, political gerrymandering that allows politicians to pick their constituents instead of the other way around, Russian-funded ads designed to foster racial divide, and a 24-hour news cycle that places more importance on breaking news than the actual policy ramifications on families. All of these are contributing factors, but none of them is as important as a personal decision to see someone who disagrees as other. Information is information. Media is media. It was us, the royal us, who decided to demonize our opposition. That's on us and no one else. More than 300 years later, we as a nation have fallen into a trap that President Washington warned us in 1796 in his farewell address. And I'm going to tell you this little quote, but it's not the Hamilton rap version. And I quote, of parties and party ideology, he said, they are likely in the course of time and things to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government. Words spoken in 1796 are now playing out in 2017. We know there's a problem. Hundreds, if not thousands, of editorials and columns have examined it. So the question now becomes, have we gone too far? Can we bring ourselves back from the brink? When we look back on our history, we see another time when divisions had grown this wide and the rhetoric this heated. That time, those tensions boiled over into a civil war that pitted brother against brother, American against American, and cost more than 1 million American lives. Well, I'm not convinced that we are careening toward armed conflict. We are already seeing tensions boil over into violence, as evidenced in Charlottesville and the death of Heather Heyer. Add to that swastikas painted on synagogues, chants of blood and soil, and kids using slurs in classrooms. While we are not teetering on the brink, we are getting very, very close. You don't wait until you're over the cliff to step on the brakes. We can see the cliff. We're nearly there. But I think that we can put on the brakes and come back from the edge, but only if we want to. And I think we do, or at least the vast majority of us. As I travel around this country, I see a new age of activism dawning. People who previously ignored politics are getting engaged on both sides. People are registering to vote, volunteering for campaigns, and running for office like never before. More and more, these people give me faith that there is a path back from the cliff, and it's largely being blazed by young people. Not only do I see their passion and vigor for change, I see them working together and working across the aisle to get things done. They see their promise of a better future slipping away, and they are working to reclaim it for themselves and for their children and one day their grandchildren. Frankly, they cannot understand why we can't figure out how to work together. And to be honest, they're right. We've been working with others since kindergarten. Why is it so hard to come together after we're elected? Which brings me to my third question. What does it really take to work together? Do you have to like someone? No, but it helps. Agree with them on everything? No, because there'd be fewer marriages. So you learn to compromise. Cheer for their baseball team? I hope not, since I'm a diehard Yankee fan. Sorry. Or sit next to them at the State of the Union? No, I never do. But it does take one thing pretty basic, and that is respect. We have to at least try and understand where someone is coming from, understand why they think a certain way, and respect their integrity, because most of us are really trying to do the right thing. Once you have a foundation of respect, you can see a path forward. But in today's political climate, where compromise is a swear word, you need a little more. You need a commitment to finding solutions. I call this a solutions-only mindset. Stay focused on solutions that work for Illinois families. Ignore the political noise. Ignore the loudmouths on both sides. And remain committed to doing the things that truly help people. It's not a difficult mindset to put into practice. In August, I hosted my first solutions-only inquiry on health care. The rules were simple. Stay focused on real solutions, no name-calling or finger-pointing, and facts and evidence really do matter. While I was disappointed that not one of my Republican colleagues from the Chicagoland area accepted my invitation, this was the first solutions-only conversation, not the last. They will be invited again. My staff and I are currently working on solutions-only events focused on creating jobs, addressing corruption, and ending gun violence. I firmly believe that if we start with a foundation of respect and remain focused on the solutions, we can work together and get something done. And if we need to sweeten the pot a little to make it work, I found that some Garrett's popcorn can help seal the deal. My Republican colleagues say I have popcorn diplomacy. And I can tell you that I have spent enough money on Garrett's at the airport that I should be able to buy the company. But with some Garrett's, I can get about anyone, Republican or Democrat, to talk to me. Seriously, we need to get back to working together, a tried and true American value. It's fundamental to our history, to who we are as Americans. For example, Illinois' favorite son, President Lincoln and his so-called team of rivals. In explaining his actions, President Lincoln noted he had no right to deprive the country of its strongest minds simply because he occasionally disagreed with them. Now, we disagree more than occasionally, but President Lincoln put country over party in the heat of deep division within his own party and within our nation. Decades later, we saw the same bipartisanship come together to propel our nation into the space age. When Sputnik launched, the U.S. space program was in its infancy, and this posed a massive national security threat to the U.S. and our allies. So Democrats and Republicans came together and in less than a year created NASA. Just one decade later, the first man, an American, walked on the moon. Fast forward to the 1980s, when President Reagan and congressional Democrats did two things completely unthinkable. They tackled not only one, but two of the third rails of American politics, tax reform and Social Security. So yes, it can be done. In fact, bipartisanship is the American tradition. So working together is important. Bipartisanship matters. But does it really create better policy? The answer is a resounding yes. Let's start with something big and international, the Nunn-Lugar program, named for Democratic Senator Sam Nunn and Republican Dick Lugar from next door in Indiana. To date, this program has secured more than 260 tons of nuclear materials that could be used to create bombs and destroy more than 500 intercontinental ballistic missiles. Bipartisanship creates good foreign policy. What about national policies? Recently, I worked with my colleagues, especially Texas Republican Will Hurd, to revolutionize government technology because some agencies were still using floppy disks. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there that worked with me before, so you're shocked that I'm involved with IT. Together, we put forward a common sense bill that everyone agreed to. Would I have wanted some changes? Sure. I think Congressman Hurd wanted some changes also. But we compromised. We worked together and passed a major overhaul of government IT that will save taxpayer money, increase our cyber defense, and prevent flash drives from still being used 50 years from now. So that's a check mark for national policies. What about state policies? When I was in the state legislature, I worked with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to pass the EDGE Act, which gives border communities an advantage to outcompete out-of-state rivals, and a common-sense bill to stop store purchases of firearms. And believe it or not, that store purchase bill was supported even by the NRA. What a difference a decade makes. Globally, nationally, and locally, ideas crafted by working across the aisle are frankly better policies than those conceived, developed, and crafted in an ideological silo. But it's one thing to talk about being bipartisan to encourage people to work together. It's another thing to put money where your mouth is and do the hard work. And here's what I'm doing right now to deliver for Illinois families. Each one is a bipartisan effort. Unfortunately, there isn't much appetite in Washington these days for groundbreaking ideas, but I'm working around the edges to tweak and expand programs to make them work better and reach more people. Let's start with one project that's a win-win for everyone. It's my Feeding America Through Farm Flexibility Act, which has been endorsed by the Illinois Farm Bureau and is co-sponsored by my downstate Republican colleague, Rep. Mike Boss. And it's pretty simple. It tweaks the crop insurance to allow farmers to grow more fruit and vegetables to help feed families living in food deserts. Right now, the crop insurance limits farmers growing fruits and vegetables on just 15% of their land. If they grow more, they start losing crop insurance. My bill increases that threshold to 20% if the additional 5% is donated or sold into a food desert. It's a win-win because families can get healthy food and farmers can grow and sell higher value products, critical when commodity prices are so low. I'm glad to share that this legislation will be part of the Farm Bill coming forward later this year. At least that's what they tell me. Helping farmers feed hungry Americans is only one of my projects. I'm also working to make it easier to put government services in your pocket. My Connected Government Act, which is co-sponsored by Rep. Mark Meadows, the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, I bring him lots of popcorn. I'm going back today to bring him his Garrett's. This bill would ensure that all government websites are mobile-friendly because right now 40% aren't, including the application for federal student aid and the launch point for bidding on government contracts, which is unbelievable. It's 2017. If businesses, nonprofits, and community associations can design mobile-friendly websites, so can the federal government. Again, this is a common sense idea that a Democrat from the Chicagoland and the chairman of the most conservative Republicans in Congress can both get behind. On a more human front, I'm working across the aisle to give law enforcement the resources to tackle sex trafficking, a partnership with Rep. Adam Kinzinger. He's south of me, and along the I-57 corridor in my district, they have a big problem with sex trafficking, which I didn't even realize myself. They even have a task force that they put together. And with a Republican former teacher from Ohio, Rep. Steve Shabbat, we just passed legislation making sure every girl has an opportunity to go to school. I'm proud to say that the Shabbat-Kelly bill just passed the full House and is now headed to the Senate. But how do we go from tweaking programs and fixes around the edges to new innovative ideas that create jobs, protect lives, and drive real positive change? How do we move from the small things to the big ones? In the wake of the tragedy in Las Vegas, I think we have an opportunity to address one of those big things, something I'm passionate about, gun violence prevention. There is a bipartisan bill to ban bump stocks, something we've all heard a lot more about, a device that turns an assault weapon into a machine gun, something that's been outlawed since the days of Al Capone. We started off on a great foot. We had a bipartisan bill introduced and members were signing on. Unfortunately, I see the wheels of progress grinding to a halt on this. Instead of passing a common sense bill, we see the speaker blaming President Obama, and we see the NRA reversing its original position and returning to its guns everywhere, rules nowhere agenda. I'm going to keep the faith that we can move this forward, like I worked with Republicans in the General Assembly to move anti-store purchasing legislation. But something needs to happen. Something needs to change. On gun violence and so many other issues, we keep running into the same roadblocks, the billions in dark money that pour into elections. Right now, too many of my colleagues are more afraid of their donors than the people who actually go to the polls on Election Day. We just saw a congressional race cost $15 to $16 million. Is that really the democracy that we want? Do we want politicians that are bought and sold to the highest bidder? I think we need to return to the days of my role model, Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm, who was proudly unbought and unbossed. But how can we, the people, compete against the millions and billions that pour in? We have to stand up. We have to speak out. Earlier this year, a cascade of phone calls stopped the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, not once, not twice, but three times. We know that people power works, and my colleagues are starting to listen more and more to the people who actually put them in office instead of just listening to those who funded their campaign. But we still have a long, long way to go, and that goes for both sides of the aisle. It's time to get the money out of politics and put people back in. And we especially need you. We needed and still need the voices of trusted individuals like doctors and nurses who spoke out against ending access to affordable health care. We need more of this. We need law enforcement speaking out against Republican efforts to legalize cop-killing bullets in the silencer legislation. We need manufacturers speaking out about the skills gap and need for qualified and properly trained workers. Speaking out matters, but we still can do more. We have to give people something to believe in. We have to be for something instead of just against everything. In 2010, we saw the emergence of a party decided to no. In fact, they weren't the party of no, they were the party of hell no. It's 2017, and I can't tell you when I last saw a Tea Party rally. It's just not enough to be anti. You have to have some substance. And that's what my Democratic colleagues and I are working to do, give real substance, real policy solutions that are simple, direct, and understandable. Policies that will help people get good jobs, help them afford a home, and bring down the cost of their medicine and health care. It's time for Illinois families and families around this country to get a better deal, a deal that invests in Illinois families and American communities, a deal that restores the promise of the American dream, a deal that treats people who work hard with fairness and compassion. It's time to invest in the working mom growing a small business and the kid trying to afford his college education. Let's remind ourselves that we are all in this together. Let's just take one of the provisions in our agenda, quality high-speed internet access for everyone. Right now, 56% of rural Illinoisans don't have quality high-speed internet access. It's 2017. You need the internet to pay your bills, check your kids' report card, and sell your business products online. How can we compete when more than half of our neighbors don't have access just because they live in a rural community? This is a jobs issue of the 21st century. The entire Better Deal agenda is built around creating jobs and training workers for the jobs today and in the future. Right now, Chicagoland has about 15,000 jobs open, advanced manufacturing jobs paying an average of $70,000 a year. In fact, some of my staff said they were going to leave me because I don't pay them that much. When I visit manufacturers, all I hear is they can't find the workers with the right skills. Our Better Deal seeks to change that by helping people get better skills for better jobs with a better wage. We want to expand apprenticeship programs and tax credits for businesses that train workers with new skills. We want to partner our community colleges with companies to develop curriculums that ensure students graduate job ready, and my bill with Senator Duckworth would make that happen. We also need to do something to help make families safe. For too long, Chicagoland has watched gun violence take the lives and futures of our young people. We've watched it tear families apart. A bullet has no name on it, and not one of us is safe until we stop the violence. There is no one simple, easy solution, but we can take some concrete steps like ending the flow of out-of-state guns that's spilling blood on our streets. According to the CPD, nearly 60% of crime guns come from outside of Illinois. A quarter come from our neighbors in Indiana and Wisconsin, yet there's still no federal gun trafficking statute. But we can and must do more. Let's take the common sense steps that are supported by 90% of Americans and 70% of NRA members and pass background checks. In the coming days, I have a meeting with a senior colleague on the other side of the aisle to talk about gun issues. When I reached out, I went over and I explained that I just wanted to understand their point of view regarding background checks, the Charleston loophole, gun trafficking, and straw purchases, because I'm very open-minded, but I just can't understand the rationale, so we'll be meeting on Tuesday. We also know that it's not enough just to pass legislation. We need to address the root of the problem. We need to give our young people hope for the future because nothing stops a bullet like an opportunity. So let's create them. Let's create jobs and mentor programs, create after-school programs, and get kids to pick up books and pencils, not bullets and guns. These aren't groundbreaking ideas. They are common sense things that work and nearly everyone supports. Unfortunately, there's a small but vocal and well-funded minority committed to saying no to everything and anything. Now, I could go on about the challenges and solutions, but we can talk for days about what we should do or could do, but there's really only one question left that matters. Do we really want to change? Are we ready to work together for a better future instead of fighting for the scraps of the present? Can we come together and look beyond the next election, the next redistricting, and actually do something, anything, for American families? Can we have the same goals but agree that we have a different means for achieving them? Can we get back to American values, values of a respected opposition and respecting the voice of American people and not just those of campaign donors? Can we really come back from the brink and give families something to believe in? Can we finally be for something and not just against everything? I think we can. If we focus on one key question, can we agree that we want to leave children and our grandchildren a better future? Okay, that's enough questions from me. Now the hard part.
Thank you very much, Congresswoman. That was great. By the way, you know, the average person all around the world speaks at a rate of about 175 words a minute. You may have established a new record. That's real. That's terrific. It's the New York in you.
Okay.
Keep beating us up.
No, we lost too, so.
Well, yeah, but I'm a lifelong White Sox fan. We would always be in first place till mid-June when the Yankees would come to town for a four-game series, and you would always win three, maybe four, and that was the end of our season. Okay. We have a number of questions here that people would be delighted if you could respond to.
I will do my best.
The first is from Tom Johnson with the Better Business Bureau, member of the City Club. It's all about the ever-growing threat of cybercrime to U.S. businesses. What can be done? What is happening in Washington? How can we team up with your cybercrime team?
Great question. My chairperson, I'm the ranking, he's a chairperson. He's actually ex-CIA, so he's really, really, really into this and has been working on this issue. We're holding a series of hearings. We did have one hearing in Chicago and one in San Antonio where he's from, but we are looking for public-private partnerships. One of the problems for government, and I don't know if Madam President runs into this and other people, that we can't afford to keep up. We can't afford the people, first of all. The federal government, you know, doesn't pay as much as state government or county government, or it seems like even local government. I think we're at the bottom. So it's hard to keep people that have the skill in cybersecurity. So we want to work out some type of public-private partnership where maybe the corporation, whoever, Microsoft or whoever you want to name, will loan us people for a couple of years, and then they go back almost like AmeriCorps or something like that. But our bill, we're trying to modernize the equipment, but again, that costs so much money too. So, you know, we're looking to meet with people. We don't have all the ideas, so come to D.C. and let's meet and see what ideas that we can put on the table. But we're trying to get more trained employees in the federal government to help us with this issue.
Okay, thank you. This is from Jelani Rucker with Zekelman Industries. As a member of the Congressional Steel Caucus, I bet we didn't know there was a Steel Caucus, can you describe what the caucus is doing to push the administration and your colleagues to do more to support domestic manufacturing?
Yes, there is a Manufacturing Steel Caucus. What we're pushing for is fairness. What we're pushing for is that our people, when they ship things out, don't have to pay so much where they're shipping to, and then we make it so easy for other countries to ship there, to have their products here. And we constantly are meeting with our manufacturers through hearings and different things like that, and just meetings to keep abreast of what the issues are, like, you know, dropping of steel, illegal logging, just so many things like that that our companies suffer. So we're trying to push, you know, to level the playing field as far as monies that have to be paid. And also, what I would like to see is our manufacturers wind up taking other countries to court. And I would say more times than not, we win. But it's just the money spent, the time spent. So changing the rules a little bit, again, so that it's more fair. Because that's the big problem.
Okay, this is from Roosevelt University Board of Trustees member Charlie Gardner. Can Democrats do anything to stop the Trump tax reform? And can Democrats capture either chamber in 2018? Two questions.
If I wasn't an optimist, I could not be in this job. So I'm feeling good about 2018, but, you know, we have to work. We can't rest on our laurels or any laurels that we have or anything like that. We're really out there working, going all over the country. But we do feel positive, but we don't want to count any chickens before they hatch. And as far as the tax reform, really the thing that's helping us is that they're not all together with the tax reform. And also, you know, it is an election year for all the House members, and they certainly don't want to go back home saying that taxes are being raised on the middle class and the very wealthy are the ones getting 80% of the break. So just that alone. And they still really don't have a bill. It's just a framework. So I think their disagreeing is helping us. And you know, I said I was trying to be bipartisan today, and I'm bipartisan, period. But and Trump, in a way, is helping us, too, because of all his comments and things he's saying. And then he's putting so much pressure on them and threatening them. So they're in a bit of chaos, which I hate to say it, but that helps us. So.
Great. Okay, this is from Howard Bloomstein, who says he's lived in the South Suburbs since 1968. It seems there's been success in the past few years in promoting the positive aspects of living in a diverse setting.
That's my question.
This is your question?
No.
Oh. What is your opinion in that regard? What more can be done?
Well, anyone that knows me in the South Suburbs knows that is something that I have fought and pushed for. And when I was the Community Relations Director for the Village of Matteson, we did, you know, all kind of things around diversity and bringing people together and really maintaining diverse communities. In fact, March 8th, 1995, I'll never forget the date. The Sun-Times had the article about the Village of Matteson, but they didn't put it in a positive way. But I think people being involved in the community, I do think it helps to have community relations directors, government relations people that go out into the community. I think it's helpful to have police community relations people in communities. I think that works really well. Like economic development builds a brick and mortar, but community relations, to me, builds the heart and soul. But, you know, we've done diversity dinners in the South Suburbs. We just celebrated 20 years of that, and we had people come from all over the South Suburbs and Indiana and actually Chicago also, and just different villages are doing things like that. But really, people coming together and getting to know each other instead of having the perceptions of the other, as I talked about in my speech, just having the opportunity to bring people together. And also, you know, we also have to work in the business arena, because I feel that one broad brush is put on the South Suburbs, you know, what we can afford, what we look like, how educated we are, and that affects what businesses are willing to come out there. I know the property tax has something to do with it, too, but those other things have something to do with it also, that one broad brush is painting on us, and we always seem like the last place to be thought about, and I think that's improving because of some of the leadership we have.
Okay, Congresswoman, the Garrett's question. You know, we're all interested in how many people, how many percentage on this, on the other, and so on. I don't know, is Garrett a publicly traded company? I don't know, it may be privately owned.
Family owned. I met the vice president because I said to him he needed to move one to Washington, D.C.
Absolutely.
Which they did. They moved one to Virginia, but I still got to buy it.
Okay, so here's the question. Based on your observations, members of your caucus and of the opposition, What do they prefer? Caramel, cheese, plain, or mix?
Actually, it's bipartisan. I have most want cheese and caramel, but Eddie Bernice Johnson, Democrat from Dallas, just likes all cheese. Marsha Fudge, Democrat from Cleveland, all cheese. Kevin Yoder, Kansas City, all cheese. But most people like it. It's not called the Chicago mix anymore, whatever the mix is. So.
You think Garrett's will replace deep dish pizza and Chicago hot dogs as the thing that we associate with food from Chicago?
No, they still associate deep dish pizza with Chicago and Polish and what else did you say? Oh, the Chicago dog.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. Folks, let's give Congresswoman Kelly a big round of applause.
Thank you.